seated. And I would like to ask our young children to come forward. Great. Great. Come on, just have a seat here. And I'll sit down too, and we can all just have a seat. What do you think? Oh, come on, Alexandra, you too. Okay. So I understand in Sunday school, I'm going to put this down a little bit. I understand in Sunday school you're going to be talking a little bit about prayer. And I want to talk to you just a little bit about maybe one of the things about prayer that you don't know. And I want to tell you the story of a man that lived a long time ago named Elijah. And Elijah lived maybe 2,000 years ago, maybe almost 3,000 years ago. And he was on a mountaintop. And what do you think God would... What? It's like one of those game shows.
He will pray to God, but be a good guy.
To be a good guy. Exactly. Well, of course he did. But sometimes God is sort of hard to recognize. And so Elijah was on a mountaintop. And there was a huge, huge wind that almost blew him off. Do you think God was in the wind?
Yeah.
Well, we hear the story, you would think God would be big and powerful like that, but God wasn't in the wind. And then there was a big lightning storm. Do you think God was in the lightning storm? Yeah, well, Ellie is too smart. She gets now the pattern. And so, and you probably know now that the answer to the last question, too, was there was a big earthquake. And was God in the earthquake? What do you think?
No,
that's good. You guys kind of know where I'm. So, and then Elijah, after there was a big wind and a big earthquake and a big lightning storm, all these huge dramatic things that you'd expect that would be what God would be. But Elijah heard the voice of God as a still, small voice that he could barely hear. Just... he had to listen with everything that was in him just to hear this almost silent whisperings of God. And that's how you have to listen sometimes. If you want to pray, you have to listen. Like you're trying to listen. Have you ever heard a cat walk across the floor?
Yeah.
Yeah, just like that.
I have a cat named Murray.
Can you name Murray? Can you hear the cat when it...
Yeah.
Well... but think how quiet that is. And that's how quiet the voice of God is sometimes, too. Okay, that's it. So I want to talk a little bit about Ezekiel and some about this, the Gospel of John, with this story of the raising of Lazarus. Just a brief note before I start, you know, in earnest, about this lesson that we heard from Romans and Paul, and when he's saying to set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the spirit is life, and it sounds as if Paul is making a pretty conventional distinction, like this is the flesh, and to be in the flesh is bad, and to be sort of somehow disembodied or not in the flesh is better, and that's really not what he's talking about. That attitude would have been more commonly found among first century sort of offshoots of main Christianity known as the Gnostics. And probably the prime characteristic of Gnostic spirituality, and that word just comes from the Greek word for knowledge. It's those in the know. And of course, you have to be pretty careful when you start thinking of yourself that way, because you're likely to be ironically found out. The Gnostics were those who were most what we would call dualistic. Flesh on one hand, spirit on the other. And they said, the only important part of us is the spark of light that comes from the original light. And this body is just a rotting prison. And it is our terrible misfortune to have our light trapped within this rotting, festering prison of flesh. And the early church rightly understood that this was entirely contrary to the sense of God incarnate, taking on flesh. And so, in the end, these two orientations, when Paul is talking about the flesh, he's not talking about this body, he's talking about a spiritual attitude. And paradoxically, the attitude of the flesh, you know, you might think it's just, it's a kind of someone who enjoys all the pleasures of the flesh, but really the attitude that Paul is trying to get at here is someone who is, who hates being a body, and who hates the vulnerability of it, and who hates the limitations of it, and wants to do anything possible to sort of overcome the weakness and powerlessness of being a human being. And so, usually, the way of the flesh is to seek power. And the way of the spirit, on the other hand, is a complete surrender to the limitations and powerlessness of this, even unto death, which is, of course, the life that Jesus lived. It is a willingness to accept the conditions that human life has here on earth. So spirit, you might think it sort of goes away from embodiment, but actually it goes down into our embodiment, and it calls us more deeply into being present in our bodies in this present moment. That's the way of the spirit. And the flesh will have none of it. It wants to get away. So, I talked long enough about that. So, would that life could be so easily punctuated under other circumstances. So we have these two stories, Ezekiel, the dry bones, and then the raising of Lazarus. Ezekiel, it's written after the people of Israel had been sent away into exile, the Babylonian exile, Jerusalem destroyed, they're all taken off into slavery. And so, of course, they're thinking, we're done. Whatever we had thought was going on in this covenanted relationship with God, it's over. We're forsaken. We're lost. And so Ezekiel is saying, actually not so fast. And so tells this story of the dry, scattered bones coming back to life, and you know, coming with that clattering. I'm a little surprised that. I haven't thought of this, but especially with the Lazarus story, I mean, what is going on with our culture with all this stuff about zombies? You know, I mean, you kind of see Lazarus kind of tottering out in his bands of cloth. I don't know. I'm bewildered by our culture's fascination with the undead. Anyway, but in Ezekiel, God is shown to be the God of life, and brings life even to situations that seem on the outside to be hopeless. And so just take that as a word. Where does it in your life, or in the life of our country, or in the life of the planet? I mean, how many people struggle with a sense of hopelessness, feeling that the planet's climate has already sort of gone past a point where we can meaningfully do anything about it, and we're left to deal with the consequences. Wherever it is that you might be tempted, and I mean that literally, the temptation to give in to hopelessness, as the Israelites might have after they've been deported, then you hear this story of the bones being reassembled and life being brought back into them, spirit breathed into them. The story of Lazarus, I think, asks us to consider much the same thing. I mentioned in passing our culture's fascination with zombies. We also have kind of a fascination with heroes of one sort or another. Superheroes, comic book heroes. And it seems to me that the feature of almost all of our sort of cultural icons is that they wield the power of death. That's the power. In the end, threat is understood to be out there, and if I am heroic, I have the power to conquer that thing out there by killing it. And I want us to notice that Jesus is a very different kind of figure. His power is the power of life, which makes him a very odd superhero. And I need to excuse me for a second. Anyone else suffering from allergies this time of year? Yeah, but you, on the other hand, don't have to have your nose run in public. Jesus is a figure that whose only power is the love of God, but also the life of God. And John is very clear. I mean, the whole book of John is described as the book of signs. These signs put forward to the people that they might come to reassess both their own understanding of things and come to understand that a very mysterious and wonderful power was at work in this figure, Jesus. And so the power that he wielded was the power of life. And it's part of really a New Testament message to us. And the New Testament message is this, that in ways that we don't even know, we are enchanted by death. It's as if death, its inevitability, its fearsomeness, its power to cause these intolerable pains to our hearts as death tears our loved ones away from us. The New Testament says we are mistaken about death, we are enchanted by death, we give death entirely too much power in our lives. But I'm not done with this section. I have more to say. The New Testament tells us we are mistaken about death, and that the God in whom we live and move and have our being is revealed to us as the pure spirit of life. I've been trying, as I've been kind of meditating on this text during the week, to look at the ways in which my own life is, as I say, enchanted by death. When you get to the metaphor of Lazarus in the tomb, of course, any of us might understand that that would apply to us, and that maybe we need to roll a stone away from our hearts and see what is in the depth of our hearts that may have been sent there long ago thinking that it was a dead part of us. And how many parts of ourselves have we allowed to die or just sent away so that we don't look at that part of our own heart anymore? And this would say, even in those places where you are afraid, and I love that gritty image, Lord, there will be a stench. I mean, how many of us might fear that in some of the places of our own hearts there would be a stench, that something has been left to rot there, like we haven't paid any attention to it for far too long. So that's kind of the metaphor of the tomb. And of course, this is looking ahead, barely 2 weeks to Easter Sunday. But the sign itself that was presented to the people is a sign asking them to consider, what do you think really God is about here? And what is God's relationship both to life and to death? And Jesus, I think, would say, in God there is no death at all. We are all going to experience physical death. And to us, it's as if that is the last act of the play. Done. Curtain falls. And what Jesus says is, actually, that's not the last act. That's not the last act. That life it's like death takes place within life. And it changes us. And we're afraid of it. And we are so enchanted by the power of death. And think how much the world operates by people and nations using the power of death to get what they think they want or need. And we're a people that does something rather differently. We say the only power we have is the power that Jesus had, which is the power that God has, which is the power of life. And I would love if a figure like, I mean, Jesus was kind of like a superhero in the Middle Ages. I mean, you look back at the art of that time, I mean, all these beautiful little miniatures of obscure Bible stories written, told in picture and told in verse. I wish we could recapture a little bit of that sense of Jesus as a hero who is among us, bringing life that is very different from the heroes we see. This one brings life. And do we let that promise into our hearts that though there is something in our midst, namely death, that has us, in a sense, on the run, that we need more than anything to look squarely at that and ask if we have understood death correctly. And Jesus would say no. Jesus would say, death actually doesn't have nearly the power that you think it has. All the power lies with God. And that power is entirely devoted to love and to life. May we all receive that gift.